When a young Iranian man moved to the UK in search for a better life, to a place where he thought would be a safe environment, for a fresh start, never did he imagine the horrors that were awaiting him.
The judge called it an act of murderous injustice, and today the man who killed and then set fire to an innocent disabled man...
The murder of Bijan Ebrahimi was described by the judge as an act of murderous injustice.
Mr. Ebrahimi was a lonely, disabled Iranian man with a passion for gardening.
Oh, I thought Lee. My house!
Lee!
Take pictures of me again, or f*** you up!
On the 14th of July, 2013, Bijan Ebrahimi was brutally murdered. He was hunted down, beaten to death, and then set on fire outside his own doorstep after being wrongly branded a paedophile. It was here in Bristol, in the southwest of England, where he lived and was murdered by his neighbours.
I'm here to find out the truth of what happened to Bijan. What did he do to deserve this barbaric act of murder? Could it have been prevented? And why didn't anyone help him?
Bijan spent the last 6 years of his life living on this council estate. It was at this flat, number 88 on Capgrave Crescent, where he was subjected to years of abuse.
Living here in a neighbourhood like this must have been very difficult for Bijan. His killer, Lee James, lived just there at number 82, and his accomplice, Stephen Norley, at 84. Bijan lived just here.
Lee James and Stephen Norley were Bijan's neighbours. James brutally carried out the act of killing, and Norley was his accomplice.
Bijan's case is incredibly sad because what happened to him happened over a very long length of time. So, it, of course, it's incredibly saddening, disgusting that this abuse was allowed to continue for such a long period of time. But Bijan's case is actually just... it felt like a lynching, actually, a modern-day lynching, because of the way he was dragged out of his home and set alight, you know? I mean, that's not that murder is anyway normal, but that mob mentality that took over with the people there who did very little, actually, to stop what was going on.
Sometime between Saturday night and early Sunday morning, Bijan was watering his flowers. James grabbed him from his home, punched him, kicked him, and stamped on his head. Bijan was beaten to death.
Without any respect for the sanctity of human life or his disabilities, Bijan was dragged to this spot and set alight.
Stephen Norley obtained some white spirit, and the pair dragged Bijan's body 100 yards from his own home, doused his body with the spirit, and set him alight. The killers then left his burning body in the street. This footage was captured by a neighbour's CCTV camera. It's reported the fire burnt fully for 12 minutes until the police and fire brigade, alerted by nearby residents, put it out. Bijan's sister, Manija Moores, shared her reaction about this footage.
It was so devastating seeing that footage. I saw the few photographs of it on one of the Sunday papers, and for days I was crying, just looking at the flames and thinking that my brother's body is lying there and it's on the fire. It was heartbreaking. And it was so difficult for us to go through that video and watch it again. But because it sends a very powerful message to the other people, we want it to be played and so everyone can see and feel our pain. That was a human being who was lying there and burning. And I hope everyone can feel it and learn something from it.
Just what possessed two men in their early 20s to attack a neighbour, beat him to death and set his dead body on fire in 21st century Britain.
What we do know is that Lee James was fueled with alcohol. And along with children and other adults in the area, they'd long been harassing Bijan and vandalising his flowers and plants. In the end, James decided that Bijan didn't deserve to live and seized an opportunity to murder him.
When Bijan began taking photographs to capture the antisocial behaviour around him, the neighbourhood turned on him and falsely accused him of being a paedophile. Bijan was born in Iran in 1969, being the youngest of five children. He was a kind and selfless man, caring for his parents for many years before they succumbed to illness. After moving to the UK, Bijan was determined to start afresh with his long-standing ambition of obtaining a higher education being his primary motive. However, a long-standing back condition worsened, causing him to become registered as disabled and thus unable to pursue his goals. His pride and joy in life whilst in the UK was looking after his flower baskets that were on display in front of his home, the same baskets that soon became the tools of his continued abuse. Bijan had long pleaded with the police to protect him against the abuse and harassment he was facing. But 3 days before his murder, the police did something quite unexpected with disastrous consequences. Rather than protect Bijan, the police arrested him. Did the police serve the perpetrators of violence rather than the victim?
The arrest of Bijan no doubt fortified James. James was the one who'd misbehaved so far, yet the result is his victim is arrested. This would have given him courage, and this is how serious the negligence of the police, the extraordinary decision to arrest the victim. This is how serious a mistake this was. That must have given courage to James. He'd already boasted that he was going to kill the man, and he did, and who was to stop him?
The footage you are witnessing was recorded by Bijan himself. Little did he know that he would be filming the man who would later kill him. Bijan filmed James drinking alcohol and smoking while looking after his children outside his flat, after a series of incidents where his flowers were damaged. James, noticing he was being filmed, barged into Bijan's home, shouting abuse and threatening him. He was 24 years old at the time.
Yes. I just f***ing warn you, you get old Bill, all you want. Get old Bill and I'll say to him, you're taking pictures of me. How old are you? I'm a little boy.
Go.
Up to you.
Go out of my house.
Get the f*** away with the f***ing pictures,
Lee.
Right?
Go out of my house.
Lee.
Trust
Lee.
Me, take pictures of me again and I'll f*** you up.
Lee, are you listening to me? Look.
If you look at the way that the killers or the killer and his accomplice behave towards Ebrahimi, how do you stop people like that emerging within a community? How do you stop them having the sort of attitudes that meant that a crowd of people could surround him and, you know, sort of feed into that general hysteria about whether he was or wasn't a paedophile? In an ideal world, there would be people that would come in and say, this is not acceptable, we don't expect you to have to put up with it.
After this incident, the police were called to the scene. But it was Bijan who was arrested instead of James. Bijan explained to the officers that he was gathering evidence about antisocial behaviour of his neighbours, but they believed James's accusations of him being a paedophile and took him in. The police held him overnight and could not find any evidence of criminal activity on either his mobile or personal computer, therefore refuting James's false accusations. The police released him the next day, but didn't alert the neighbourhood of Bijan's innocence.
When Bijan was held in police custody, they had a chance to discuss the history of this matter with him. He no doubt told them how many times he'd complained before, and they no doubt had an opportunity to check that that was true. They could talk to him. They could see he was a victim. They had the greatest duty of care that if he was to go back to his own home, a warning had to go out. Information first, that this man is not a paedophile, as the false rumours spread by James suggested. This man deserved care, and there's a duty of care on the police officers. Instead, he's released back to a hostile community who've had the satisfaction of seeing him wrongly arrested before. Fortified by that extraordinary decision, here he is, he's game for them.
It is no conspiracy that the police had clearly failed to protect Bijan and keep him safe. The head of the police force in the area admitted their failures.
We know that things went wrong. We know that Mr. Ibrahimi was failed, and we're very sorry about the whole incident and the terrible loss to his family.
After being sent back home by the police, during the course of that evening, Bijan made several calls to the police reporting on the continuing hostility of his neighbours. He was essentially making pleas for help, but he was ignored.
Bijan was a victim of harassment. Other people were behaving badly. They were behaving antisocially. He gathered evidence, which in the modern days is perfectly ordinary for him to have filmed what other people were doing, how they were misbehaving. That's all he did. He himself never misbehaved. False accusations were spread against him. Again, he behaved properly. He made modest and reasonable complaints to the authorities, and no one cared and no one paid any attention. And it's only now, as a victim, as someone who's been killed by the criminal, that we pay attention to his story.
How did the British police fail to protect Bijan time and time again?
What damages confidence is where there isn't transparency, because the public have now got to believe that if there isn't transparency, that they believe the police are hiding something. The police in this point has been very clear, have been very open and very public about what they have done and what they haven't done.
Immediately after Bijan's murder, an investigation was launched by the Independent Police Complaints Commission, a police watchdog, to determine how the police dealt with Bijan in the events leading to his murder. If transparency was so important, then why did it take over 1 year after Bijan's death for the investigation to be completed? Questions were even raised in Parliament concerning the delays in the investigation.
The Home Secretary will, I hope, be aware of the tragic murder of my constituent, Bijan Ebrahimi, whose killer was sentenced last Thursday. He was attacked on the grounds that his neighbours thought, quite unjustifiably, that he was a paedophile. I have written to the Home Secretary, but can I urge her to do anything that she can to make sure that the IPCC has the resources to report as quickly as possible? It's really important for community cohesion in that area that we can resolve this.
The Honourable Lady makes a very serious point about this terrible case. I will indeed look, I haven't seen the letter that she sent to me yet, but I will indeed look very carefully at what is she is saying in that. And of course, overall, we are trying to ensure through extra resources in the IPCC that they are able to do their job effectively in looking at how cases where there are complaints against the police are dealt with. As she says, this is a terrible case, and I will look at her letter very carefully.
Even after Bijan's death, the failures of the police were haunting him. Bijan's family have had an agonising time waiting for the police to provide answers. The results of investigation is still not available to the public.
I'm not quite sure why it did take the IPCC so long. I know that there was the delay because the original report in December 2013 wasn't satisfactory. They obviously had quite... I think they interviewed 18 police officers and support staff, but they always had to talk to neighbours as well, and then they did have to go back over quite a period of time. It's difficult for me as sort of an outsider, although I've had a couple of conversations with them, to know how much time they were actually able to devote to it. They seem to have been steadily working on the case, but I'm sure it would have been the case that if they'd had more people working on it, if they hadn't been subject to cuts in resources, then they could have done it a bit quicker. And I think in terms of the sort of feeling within the community, the tensions within the community, it would have been very helpful if they could have dealt with it quicker.
Finally, the outcome of the investigation led to three police officers and one police community support officer being charged with criminal offences. The three police officers are accused of failing to respond to allegations and calls for help by Bijan, and the other officer is accused of lying about the contact he had with him. And as well as the four facing criminal charges, a further six officers and seven members of staff will be subjected to disciplinary action. But this will not happen until the court case is concluded, which won't happen until later this year. This means it could now be more than 2.5 years after Bijan's death before any action with the police is taken. So with the police still in court, why did Bijan even need police protection in the first place? As an Iranian, he stood out in a predominantly white community. Was he targeted because of his race?
You can't distinguish from the fact that he was targeted because of who he was, the fact that he was disabled and the fact that he was Iranian. You know, you cannot get away from those facts. I think you have to look at the fact that Bijan was harassed over a very, very long period of time. And if you cannot put, you cannot say that that was for other factors. I think race had to have played a part in what happened to him. I don't think there's any denying it.
In the year 2013 to 2014, there were at least 44,480 hate crimes recorded by the police in the UK, an increase of 5% from the previous year, and of which 84% were racially aggravated hate crimes.
People do hold Britain up as this great country of justice, truth and honesty. I have to say, the reality is actually something different. I think it does depend who you are, actually, for it to work for you like that. When you're constantly being bombarded by racist sentiment in the Daily Mail, you know, on Sky News, on you know, in the media that is all around you, then I think it has to have an impact. And it's quite clear from some of the cases on our list that the media climate has very clearly had an impact on racial violence and racially motivated murders.
Although Bijan's case is said to be an unusual and unfortunate crime for Bristol, high racial tensions and poverty make foreigners susceptible to abuse.
He was living in the wrong area. I know of black families that have had to move from these areas because of the racist taunts, and they've been terrorised out of their homes. So these are plainly white, you know, working class areas, and sadly areas that are deprived and with a lot of poverty.
After the sentencing of Stephen Norley and Lee James at Bristol Crown Court, Bijan's sister, Manisha Moores, spoke to the press, expressing her concern on the subject matter.
A wonderful son, brother and uncle has been lost to this war. The next question to be answered is whether Bijan's death could have been avoided if he had received the protection he deserved from the authorities. Lesson must be learned before other vulnerable lives are lost.
What role does society play in the problems Bijan faced?
Bijan's torment at Capgrave Crescent wasn't an isolated incident. The scars run much deeper. He was driven from his previous home here at West Town Lane after it was set alight. Bijan experienced the most horrendous abuse on almost a daily basis here in the UK.
Another reason for his victimhood, in addition to his race, was debilitation back problems. The British government has had a history of failing to provide enough support for disabled people.
The cuts facing disabled people's organisations as well, which play a key role in supporting and encouraging reporting, supporting disabled people, lobbying for change, all these kind of things. They are facing huge funding problems as well. They've been facing funding problems for a while, and it started with the recession, but it has certainly accelerated under the coalition, under the austerity measures, certainly. I mean, the council's facing 27% cuts. That's bound to have an impact on local disabled people's organisations run by disabled people, which are often funded in large part by their local authorities.
In 2014, the Conservative Welfare Minister, Lloyd Floyd, showed his disgraceful attitude towards disabled people by saying it's not worth paying them the national minimum wage.
There is a group, and I know exactly, they're actually, as you say, they're not worth the full wage. But actually, I'm going to go and think about that in particular. There is something we can do nationally and without distorting everything, which actually, if someone wants to work at £2 an hour, it can be actually.
What kind of message does this send to British citizens who are disabled?
I don't think it's so much what disabled people can do. I think it's really more about what, apart from reporting, they can do more to report. Try and push themselves to report these very worrying and unsettling things that happen to them. But it's more about what society needs to do to address those barriers that disabled people face. And this is one for the government, this is one for local authorities, public bodies, society as a whole, to address this kind of persistent, endemic discrimination and hostility that kind of bubbles beneath the surface.
So Bijan was more than just a victim of his murderers, but of society also. He played by the rules and consistently asked for help, but was let down by the system. There was nothing more he could have done. You would think that at least his killers would get what they deserved.
In Britain, stabbings, violence and racial abuse are destroying lives. Naturally, the British public are frightened. In Bijan's case, his killer was his neighbour. Here at Bristol Crown Court, the UK legal system decided that James could be back out on the streets in just 18 years.
What about Norley, who dragged Bijan's lifeless body and set it alight with the white spirit? Well, at the time of sentencing, the court decided he could be out in just 2 years. Was this a fair sentence given the overwhelming context of their actions in the lead-up to Bijan's murder?
Many people will think that the 18-year minimum tariff received by Lee James was lenient. The judge has to select a starting point for his sentence. And even if, in those days, the campaign against Bijan didn't fit into any category that gave a higher starting point, even if the right starting point was as low as 15 years, each judge must look at the individual circumstances of the case. Every aggravating factor can lead the judge to any sentence. You can start as low as 15 and you can end up double that sentence. This judge knew enough about the background of this offence, knew about the campaign, knew about the racist attitudes that were expressed by James and supported by cheering crowds. Armed with that material, the sentence could have been a lot higher.
The problem of racial violence and how it is treated by the British police and criminal justice system was highlighted by the investigation into the murder of Stephen Lawrence, which resulted in a McPherson report in 1999.
At that time, there was a massive recognition of racially motivated violence. Huge number of recommendations were made by McPherson about how the police should investigate such crime and how they should be prosecuted by the criminal justice agencies, how they should be handled within the court system by the CPS and by judges. But the problem is in the practice now. Race is deleted out. And quite often this happens when judges come to sentence as well. They have the power to bring the racial element back into a case and sentence accordingly. Quite often they refuse to do so. But my understanding of the case is that Bijan believed it was racially motivated, as did his family. Therefore, according to McPherson, the police had a duty to investigate it as such. They may not have believed it, they may not have found evidence of that, but they had a duty to investigate it as such. And I think that's part of the problem. The police become the judge and the jury and say, no, race wasn't a factor here.
In 2013, new laws came in ordering that if a murdered individual is targeted because of hate crime on the basis of disability, instead of the murderer having to face a minimum of 18 years, they would be liable to serve a minimum of 30 years. However, the criminal justice system did not treat Bijan's case as a disability hate crime.
Because the criminal justice system did not treat this as a disability hate crime, the person who murdered Bijan was sentenced to 18 years minimum rather than 30 years. And we won't know until we see those reports why those decisions were made, but it certainly seems to me that they were wrongly made.
Much remains to be answered in Bijan's case. Why were his pleas for help ignored? Why wasn't race or his disability taken into account? Will the police officers who dealt with him be found guilty for their misconduct? Whatever the answers may be, it's all too late for Bijan. Bijan's dream of a normal life with the minimum necessities, such as peace and security, proved too idyllic for the UK society and system.